Okay, tonight we've asked Matthias to join us. He's going to be speaking to you for a little while and showing us a presentation. So, Matthias.
Okay, so good evening, everybody. I will talk to you about what it means to be a Christian in France, and especially what it means to be a young Christian in France. And I guess now it's not awkward for you, but I hope that at the end of the presentation you will understand how awkward it could be to say something like that. So, I will first tell you general facts about France, then I will explain you about several things about everyday life in France, and then I will talk more about the church in France, the Christian church, and what it means for the young people to go to church. And then finally, I will propose some ideas to try to share faith together with the people in France and to try to build something together. So first, about the location of France, just for those who might forget where it is. This is in Europe, and this is that green country here. So surrounded by a lot of seas around, and really at the crossroads of Europe. If you want to go from north to south, from east to west, you need to cross France. And a lot of invaders have done that for centuries and centuries, crossing in all the way along to invade one country or another one. And so this is in Western Europe, so like I said, this is temperate climate. Quite a lot of snow in the mountains, so for skiing this is really great, a lot of snow. That's not really dry, most of the time it is 45% of humidity or something like that, so this is really mild and comfortable. And in fact, Caesar, the emperor of the Roman Empire, used to say that place, what was France at that time, was really blessed by the gods because of the climate is so great and everything is growing, and so this is really a mild place to live. 63 million inhabitants currently, and this is the surface. I don't remember, I guess this is something like twice Texas or something like that. So the density of population is much higher than what you see in New Mexico. And as I said here, people tend to say that France exists since the Roman times. In fact, this is more about the 9th century. All the territory is defined as France. This is a satellite view of France. So you see this is Great Britain here. You've got Germany here, Belgium, Italy, Spain. You've got here these mountains are the Pyrenees. Here, all of these mountains, this is the Alps. So a little part belongs to France. And especially the Mont Blanc, that is the highest mountain in the Alps and the highest in Europe. And so for skiing, you go here or you go here, for example. And then you've got Brittany here. This is Normandy. When all the Allies came in World War II, they came by Normandy from that side. And for a while, during World War I, all the battlefront was all along here, roughly from that place to all the way along the border to that place, to the sea, from the mountains to the sea. And in the center here, you've got some mountain of low elevation, but it's pretty cold, in fact, pretty cold for the weather. And almost no inhabitants at all in that place, right in the center. Inhabitants used to be more something like that in that place. And Paris being somewhere here. So some history about France, for you to know a little bit the implication of the history from a religious point of view. So Clovis, he was a king of what became France later in time, and he became Roman Catholic. He was the first king in Europe to become a Catholic, from a kind of an official point of view. And in the 9th century, it was Charlemagne who became the emperor. He had a huge empire that was across all Europe, and he was the first one to really protect the church, what was the Catholic Church at that time. And basically, you had a lot of people coming from the east who were trying to put a lot of pressure on the church to try to fight against the church. And he was the one who came and protected the church. He offered his army to protect the church at that time. In 1562, this is the beginning of the wars of religion between Catholic and Protestants. So this is the beginning of the Reformation, and the Catholic Church is fighting back really hardly. So burning people, killing people, burning villages, and burning all the Bibles when they can find Bibles and things like that. And sending all the Protestants that they can find to jail or to hard labor or whatever. And in fact, to give you an example, the city Grandma, this is a city where I was living before moving here. Today this is almost the same as during the Middle Age. This is 4,500 people living here. At the end of that, these wars of religion, you had only 5 inhabitants alive in the whole city. It was so terrible that they had to add people to immigrate, to call to immigration, to have new people coming in that area, because everybody had been killing everybody, basically. And you will see this is something in the French mindset that is still very present. When you talk about religion to anybody in the street, first thing that they are going to think about, this is the rise of religion. This is families killing each other and things like that. In 1789, this is the French Revolution, following the American one, really inspired. You can re-visualize the two revolutions as parallel. Each revolution fertilizing the other one. And at that time, they decided that the clergy is going to belong to the state. And basically, they took all the properties of a church, and everything became property of a state. And then the clergy was supposed to be paid by the state. And the church made a big mistake at that time. They decided to fight against the revolution. And so for all the people, that's also something else. When you talk about religion, they're going to say, yes, but the clergy has been against the revolution. The clergy is against the people. And for the kings, for the powerful people, not for the basic people. And in 1905, this is the separation of church and state. And for Protestants in France, this is a very important time. Because before that time, being Protestant, all the country was supposed to be Catholic. Being Protestant was kind of hard on everyday's life. And thanks to that, it was now possible to be a Protestant, to go to a Protestant cult without any problem. So about the recent history during the 20th century. So before World War I, it was the end of the 19th century. And everybody was seeing technical progress everywhere, industry building up and a lot of things. And people were thinking, we are going simply by our thinking to improve the way we are living. We are going to improve everything, to discover everything. In a couple of years, we are going to have a science so powerful we can explain everything. And we can live in a paradigm that is great and that's wonderful. Problem, 1914, you've got beginning of World War I. And everybody is thinking it's going to be a matter of 3 months or 4 months, and that's done, and we come home, and everybody is happy. People leave to go to war, they are singing, they are really happy. It's going to last for 4 years, and in France alone, you're going to have 1.5 million people killed. It has changed all the society, because you had so many people missing at the end of the war, that women had to work. Before the war, they were not working. After the war, they had to work, because men were basically dead. And it changed the demographic of the country. When you see the repartition of the age repartition in the French society, you'll still see World War I and World War II, because a lot of people had been missing. And just for you to compare, this is 1.5 million deaths for a population that is 1/5 of the United States. So if you want to compare to the US, that would be like the same today, 7.5 million Americans missing after 4 years of war. And another big difference, before World War I, the French currency was equivalent to the dollar today. You wanted to trade anywhere in the world, you would use the French currency. After World War I, France is bankrupt. Everything has been destroyed. 60% of the gold of the world before World War I was in Europe. At the end, 60% of the gold is in the US, because Europe has basically destroyed every single thing. And this is the same in Great Britain and the same in Germany. These countries are totally ruined after the end of the war. And also the millions of people injured. You had people coming back because of a combat gas, coming with half a lung to breathe or something like that. And it's going to shock the people to see something like that. We're thinking that we're making some progress, we're going to become great people, everything will be nice. And after 4 years, they see that it has been a nightmare, that progress, basically the science, has been used to kill people, to injure people instead of improve things. And after that, you've got World War II. So that's not that much of a big battle for France, because it has been lost so quick that you don't have that many people who were really killed during the war. But then you've got the occupation by the Third Reich, and a lot of people being sent to concentration camps, and especially something between 6 and 7 million Jews killed in these camps. Plus all the people were simply opponents and were sent to the camps and being killed. So again, that's a deep shock on the people. I've got an uncle in my family. He came back from the camps. He was weighing something like 60 pounds. And he was half crazy for the rest of his life because of that. So that's, again, it has been another shock. And now when you tell people, you know, there's a God and God loves you and so on, first thing they're going to tell you is, yes, but why World War One? And why the concentration camps? Can you explain me that? And I remember I saw on the TV the other day, it was some documentary about 9/11. And they're explaining that for some people, that's how God can allow something like that. And you see, that's totally a different scale. That's not a few thousand people killed, that's terrible, a few thousand. But when you see the few millions people, you've got that 1.5 million, you've got the same number of people who died in Germany, but 500,000 of Russians who died also, but almost 500,000 of British who died in the same place. So this is a totally different scale. And the traumatized for society is huge. And then just following World War II, you've got all the independence wars following. You've got what will become Vietnam, that was first a French war, then France left the battlefield and the US came, and then it was Algeria and several others. And so at the end of that, after all of that during the 20th century, people have lost all the confidence in the state, they lost the confidence in the army, they lost confidence in the church, they lost confidence in everything. Basically, they want to trust themselves and that's all. So when you try to talk to them about God, about having a structured society, it's really hard because of all of that. It basically destroyed everything you're going to talk about. About the composition of the religions, you've got between 83 and 88% of Roman Catholics in France, only 2% of Protestants, and then 1% Muslim, 5 to 10% of Muslims, and 1% of Jews. So being a Protestant is really being a small minority in France. Basically, when I was at school, I was the only one in all the school to be Protestant.
Wow.
Except when my sister was here, but that's all. So that's kind of, you're in a classroom, people are starting to talk about the wars of religion, and there's a question, who is Catholic? Everybody, yeah, I'm Catholic. Who is Protestant? And you're the only one raising your finger. It's not always easy. You need to be confident to be different, you know, because you're really different then. And that's even worse when you see about who is going to church. Because in the U.S., you got on the average 57% of the people going to church every single week. In France, this is at the maximum 15%. So when you say, I'm going to church next weekend, you belong to that 15% minority. And this is everything included. This is not 15% of Protestants. This is 50% of the whole society, Protestant, Catholics, and so on. So that's really weird when you say that you go to church. People will start to ask you, why? Why do you waste your time for that? It's not for you, and it's bad for you. I mean, for most of the people, you can talk about sex, whatever when you want, it's not going to be a problem. Start to talk about religion, everybody is shocked, that's a taboo. Because basically for people, religion is something that kills people, that's something dangerous, that's something from the past, and that's something you need to run away from that. And some of the statistics, so 41% said that for them, God doesn't exist. And then you compare that with that, you see that there is a problem. You cannot have 88% of the people saying that they're Catholics and 41% saying that they don't believe in God. The sum is not 100, you know, that's much more than that. So that means that you've got people who declare they're Catholics, but they don't believe in God. And basically this is what happens when you step inside of a Catholic church. Basically you see nobody. There's nobody, people are just going once a year or something like that for the tradition. They don't believe in God, they just go because their parents did the same, their grandparents did the same. It has been the same for centuries, so they need to go once a year, and that's all. They don't really want to listen to the preacher or whatever, because they need to be there, and that's all, period. Not too often, just a little while. So, now I will talk to you about everyday life. This is a few questions that I've got a friend of mine who had a little stand, a little booth at the university in Georgia where I was living before. And these are questions that people were asking her at the university. So that's kind of scary. So I will try to show you the answers to these questions.
Electricity. Okay.
So talk first about what you see when you come into France. This is really scenic. This is really beautiful, beautiful things to see everywhere, a lot of nice things to visit. So this is really nice. This is really nice country. And a lot of people over the centuries have been saying that this is really nice country. And that's why you've got 75 million of visitors a year. This is the first country for the number of people coming to visit it. So that means you've got more. If you are in France, for example, this summer, you would be in the street in France. More than one people over two is a tourist. He's not a French citizen. He's just visiting. You've got more tourists than people living in France.
How do they feel about that?
It depends on the place. When you are in Paris, for example, you've got a huge concentration of tourists. Basically, in summer, you don't have any French, except people working for the tourists, and that's all. So it tends to be not really that nice. Because and in fact, I must say, it's easy to understand. When you've got a lot of tourists, that's not always pleasant. You can have nice people, but most of the time, you're going to have to remember really the bad people coming to break things and to be unpleasant with you, so that's not really pleasant. When you go more in the countryside, that's much better because people are really going to be open and really much more friendly. And in fact, that number, it has a huge repercussion on the way it is when you visit things, because you see that everything is really designed to be visited for the tourist. So that means that you've got a weekend, you just want to go visit some place. Everything is already there for vacation and anything like that. But that's a big difference, I think, compared to the U.S. You come to visit a little village in the middle of nowhere, and you're going to have hotels, you're going to have people explaining you what you need to visit, you're going to have tours of a little village and things like that. Because that's common to have a lot of people over the year to come and visit that place. So, like I said, a lot of very nice cities, places, monuments, castles, ski areas, and so you've got people coming for going to the sea, to the seaside. You've got people coming for skiing in the winter. You've got people coming to visit places, people coming just to enjoy being in the nature and things like that. And so a lot of ways to spend great vacations. And so that, I will show you a couple pictures. So first in Paris, the Eiffel Tower. That one, this is in the Alps. So this is the Alps. You've got the Mont Blanc somewhere around here. And I can tell you that place, it was right in summer, because otherwise that's covered by snow, and this is a place you can ski actually in winter. This is covered with people. You've got hundreds of people hiking around and visiting because it is really nice. That place, this is in Corsica. And again, you've got a lot of tourists coming to visit these places because this is really nice. The water is warm and you've got great weather. And that place, this is a village in the Alps. That one actually is a village that is the highest in France. But in fact, when you compare the elevation here compared to Albuquerque, that's lower than Albuquerque. Simply because the weather is so different that the tree line is something like 2,000 meters lower in France than it is here. Here in France, you would have no trees at all. It's too cold. You would have snow staying all the year round and things like that. It will come. This is again a little village in Corsica.
Is that what that is?
This is skiing this winter in the Alps. And by the way, this is the biggest ski area in the world. When you look at, for example, at Santa Fe, you've got something like 10 lifts or something like that. Taos, you've got 50 lifts. Here, you've got 297 lifts.
Oh, my gosh.
450 miles of slopes. That's huge.
Wow.
The first 2 days, I was constantly skiing for hours, all the day long. We never came twice to the same place. That's great.
Wow.
That's wonderful for skiing.
Wow. Let's go.
This is Corsica again. That's in Lyon. This is so close to the place where I was born. So this is a little street. This is a Renaissance place.
What's it called?
Lyon. Lyon. This is the name of the city. That was the capital of France at the Roman time.
L-Y-O-N.
L-Y-O-N. And all that place, all this group of houses belong from the Renaissance.
Oh, wow.
And you don't have the right to come in with your car, so you just hike down, you go shopping, enjoying the restaurants, and it can be really pleasant. Baron is again Lyon, so again Renaissance style. That's canoeing in the southwest of France. So you're canoeing the quiet river. You've got nice countryside. You've got a castle on the side like that. That's really nice also. This is hiking in the east of France in the mountains with a castle like that in the middle of the mountains. That's really beautiful.
Yes, door-to-door witnessing will be difficult.
This is open air markets. This is a cheese, selling cheese here. You've got, there's a saying that there's something like 800 different cheese in France.
Oh my god.
Oh my goodness.
This is bread. Again, you've got a lot of different shapes and kind of breads. The crust is really strong, in fact. This is crusty crust. This is not something soft.
Do you know how to make that?
Sorry?
Do you know how to make bread?
Yeah. A lot of wine also in France. You've got basically people growing wine almost everywhere. It came by at the Roman time, and then it was overnight. People were making beer. At the time they discovered wine, overnight everybody was making wine, and it never stopped before then. People are still making a lot of wine everywhere, and you've got a lot of great wines, and very expensive ones also. This is a place, for those of you who know that I was away this spring. The high-tech company I was working in is located in that little village.
Oh, wow.
That was the road I was taking every morning to go to work.
Oh, how sad.
Aren't you so glad to be here now?
Oh, yeah.
This is, again, a village in the Alps. So, again, this is closed except for the inhabitants. We have a right to come with a car, but otherwise you need to hike. You need to walk in the village. You cannot take your car. Again, this is because for visiting, this is much better. And you see that this is something in the center of the cities. This is very common to close everything for people just visiting. And this is really because people are used to a lot of tourists, and so you tend to do everything around that. Again, close to the place where I was this spring, that's a very nice village. It has been a pilgrimage place for 1,200 years.
They do have electricity.
And here I told you about all the people who died in World War I, and in every single village in France you've got that kind of monument. And this is a monument with the names of the people of the village who died on the battlefront. And every single year at November the 11th we've got a big ceremony with all the officials coming around that and reading aloud all the names. And this is something, really, it shows you really something when you see that many monuments in every single village. And I mean, when you are in a very small village, I mean something like 200 people living here or something like that, and you see the same names coming over and over and over, you see that the whole family has been totally destroyed, all the men have been killed on the battlefront, you really realize it was not really a lot of fun for people at that time. So when you tell people in France you're going to church, the way they're going to represent church is something like that. This is an old building, the ceiling is really far away, this is cold, it's freezing in winter, and you've got a little man moving around here, this is a priest. And it's full of dust everywhere and spiders. Again, another church. This one is the church in the village where I was born. That's a 14th century church.
Was that a Catholic
church?
Sorry?
Right. Yeah, basically, we've got a very few historical Protestant church. Most of the churches are Catholic, except in a few areas where you can have a few buildings that were Protestant from quite a long time. But otherwise, they have been destroyed, you know. Here, this is the plaza on the village where I was born. So again, it was a place with a lot of tourists, I can tell you. And that tree was planted here for the French Revolution, so it's 200 years old.
Oh, wow. What was the name of the city?
Of the city here? Pérouge. Wow. You're impressed, right?
I'll be all right.
Again, when I was something like 8 years old or something like that, I was, of course, going to the school at my village, and my classroom was here. Again, same village. And here, so this is my family, so you know everybody now. And to show you a church, we had no way to do baptism in anything. So we had one first solution is just to have some kind of little inflatable swimming pool in the garden and you baptism here. Otherwise, I found that place. This is a spring. And so I've been baptized in that.
So that's your mom, dad, and sister?
Right, right.
What are their names?
Thierry, Carole, Daniel.
It's prettier with his accent.
But I can tell you the water was really cold. And here, this is the church in Grammar, so in the southwest, where I was, where I've been baptized. And now this is almost double that.
Wow.
It has grown a lot. And you see here, all the church, when I came to the U.S., all my church in France was here on the picture. And here, this is it was a youth group 3 years ago. With the pastor, who is an Irish missionary, his wife, Irish too, and then our group around here. Usually we had a dinner and then we would sing and pray and had a little study. Because something else, this is really important in France, everything around the dinner. When you want to get to know somebody, you're going to invite him in your house to have a dinner. And it's going to last two hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever. And yes, we've got wine in France and even a church. I'm sure you want to be in France now, to the youth group in France, to have champagne every single time.
It's like water here, basically.
Comes out of a faucet.
That's pretty nice.
Hey, the bubbles, you know, clean bubbles, right?
Yeah. So, okay. Now I want to tell you that France is not only a country with a lot of history and places to visit and things like that. You still have some modern aspect. That's also a modern country. This is the fifth country by GDP with a permanent seat of the United Nations, nuclear power, military and civilian. And in fact, this is the biggest country for the number of nuclear reactors. And that's kind of scary for the nuclear part of the thing, but in fact for all the emissions and the problem of pollution with CO2, that's really great, because thanks to that, France is not producing a lot of CO2. Hopefully there's no law against the uranium and things like that. And also a lot of things, of programs, like a high-speed train. Its record has been at 320 miles an hour, and when you travel between two cities, it goes at 200 miles an hour.
Wow.
So it's even more convenient than plane, you know, when it's not too far away, that's very convenient. You're from downtown one place to downtown another city at 200 miles an hour, that's really quick.
Is that the one that goes between France and Italy?
It's not going full speed between France and Italy. Not yet. They've got a project to build one that would go full speed, but this is the one that is going also between Paris and London. But again, it goes full speed on the French side. And then very very slowly on the British side, but they are building now a new line. And it's connecting also Paris to Bruxelles and Paris to the Mediterranean Sea and things like that, and this is really convenient. You sit on that, you show up at the train station 10 minutes before departing, you board your train, 2 hours later you're far, far, far away.
Yeah.
And they're trying to increase the speed by little steps at every time, every couple of years.
Are they maglev trains?
No. That's a regular train. But in fact, the track is a little bit different just for the high speed, because otherwise they had some problems with the conventional tracks. And that's why in Great Britain it was not possible to go full speed, because they had a very old tracks, and they had to build a new one in order to accommodate for the train. And first they believed it would not be a success, so they didn't want to spend the money building a new one. And now they realize they need to build a new one. And so they're building a new one. I mean, it totally kills the plane for short distance. Something like a couple hundreds of miles, there's no point in taking the plane. It's more convenient. You don't have any screening or anything like that. And like at an airport, you don't have any security or whatever. And it's really quick. And you go from downtown one city to downtown another city. So, and within the cities, you've got a lot of undergrounds, a lot of buses or things like that. So you really don't need a car. Except if you land at an airport, and then you need a car in 1 hour or 2 hours to enter the city.
Wow.
And other things, like you must have heard about the Airbus, the plane that has quite a lot of parts, and the final assembly is done in France. A lot of big scientific facilities, like CERN, this is a particle accelerator, this is between Switzerland and France. ITER is going to be installed in the south of France, in a place in the middle of nowhere, but that's really a pleasant place in Provence. It's going to be really nice. So hey, this is another accelerator in close to Paris, and so on. And so I put a couple of pictures. Like that, this is an Airbus plane. That one is a Rafale, that's a fighter. That one is a combat helicopter. That's a nice one. That one is able to do a loop like that. Not really on the perfectly vertical, a little angle, because otherwise it would fall, but it's doing a loop. This is Ariane 5, the rocket. This is a submarine. That one has been a race car that was really successful a couple of years ago. It was so successful that they had to prevent that car from entering the competition at some point, because all the other makers were leaving the competition. There was no point. They're always winning. When they're showing up with three cars, they would have the first three place. So after a couple of years, people get tired of that, and they didn't have the right anymore to use that car. And here are several things. This is a huge bridge in the southwest, close to Grammont again. It just opened. This is a particle detector in the CERN. That one, this is the VLT, this is telescope, European telescope that is now installed, in fact, not in France, but in South America. Here, this is the high-speed train, that one that you see here. In fact, with double deck. And I put a picture of that. This is a project on which I was working.
So that where the bridge is, where is that again?
This is in the southwest of France, close to the place where is the church in France.
Do you know how tall it is?
The biggest one here, this is taller than the VFL Tower.
Oh my God.
So this is 120 feet, more than 900 feet. And in fact, the first truck driver who took that was scared to death on that. Because they were so high because of a truck, but they didn't saw, you know, the little walls. And were so high that they impressed by piloting a plane, you know.
Wow.
I just regret one thing. I wanted, just before leaving, it was still in building, I wanted to go rappelling down when you were building a bridge, and I didn't take the time to do that. That would have been great.
Have you driven across that bridge?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Is it illegal to jump off?
I just saw somebody jumping with a parachute, yes, from that. So a picture of somebody with a parachute. They've got plenty of room to jump. And now I'm going to talk about the church itself. So this is a citation of somebody told that to a friend of the church. What? You say you pray God? Is it some sickness, some psychological disorder or something like that? That's kind of a mindset of the people around. And so first, the city of Grammont that I talked about. This is a picture of a city. This is in the southwest of France, kind of in the middle of nowhere. And it was installed in the middle of nowhere for the same reason as Sandia National Labs. It's working on the same things, and the goal was exactly the same. You're in the middle of nowhere. Nobody knows what you are doing here. You are hidden from everybody else. Not anymore with the satellites, but at least 50 years ago, that was true. And it's really similar to Sandia, but much smaller.
Do you have any openings?
Sorry? How about the church? So it was founded in 1985. It moved to Grammont a little while after that. And now there's something like 60 people, or maybe a little bit more. It's really growing steadily now.
And this is where you were born?
No. This is the place where I finished my studies here. I was working in the military center, and so I went to that church here. And so you see the building here. And basically, this is the church here. This is the pastor living here. And they've got plenty of rooms here for me, for anybody who is visiting the church, who have some room where to sleep. And this is really convenient. You've got missionaries visiting the church. You give them a room.
Very nice.
And usually, and this is the garden right behind the church. When there is a baptism, usually this is done behind the church, except if you want to go in a river or something like that. And for the youth group, so usually, as I told you, this is a dinner with fellowship together, singing and things like that. It used to be something like once a month or something like that. And in fact, that's not really always easy because that's really a place with only very small towns. So when you go to middle school, that's fine. That's not too far away. When you go to high school, that's really far away. You live for the whole week because it's too far away. So it's not always easy to have the people to meet together. And as I told you, at school it can be kind of stressful when you've got faith, because other people are not going to share your faith, and they don't understand it. For them, they are hostile to your faith, because for them it's something strange, something that could be dangerous, that's something really they don't understand how you can have faith, and they don't understand if this is something really dangerous or not. And you've got some kind of opposition because of that. That's nothing official. We are just in the mindset of the people that they're kind of hostile to that. And I think this is a great opportunity for maturing, because when you're like that, you don't walk into the church simply to follow everybody else. Because otherwise you would be playing outside or bicycling or whatever. If you go to church, you know why you're here. So that's really great for maturing. But on the other hand, because you've got that much of opposition from the outside, it tends to be dangerous also at some point. If you are strong enough in your faith, you're going to mature really quick. If you're not strong enough, it's going to be really hard. You're going to struggle quite a lot. And as I said here, this is kind of a BCH mindset. You know, people tend to be in the church and you close everything and you hope that nobody is going to attack you before the coming of the Lord, you know. And you really close the door and you hope nobody bad is going to happen. But on the other hand, you've got a very close relationship to the people, because you really share something that is unique. And it puts also a lot of pressure on you to do something more. I mean, I remember a lot of people telling me that they were scared about their kids being not strong enough in the faith or things like that. I would have said to the people, hey, open your eyes. Your kid, you say they are really weak in the faith. What have they done last year? Last year they spent 1 year helping in a Christian center for violent teenagers. So that's not really being weak, you know. That's just that a lot of people in the church, that's amazing, a lot of the people of my youth group, they went to be missionaries in a lot of different places. So one is missionary in Russia, and you saw that the group is really small. So one has been missionary in Russia, another one in Africa, two spent time helping in different places in France, in hospitals or things like that. Another one is helping for taking care of kids and things like that. So that's really, people are really willing to do a lot of things. And in some way, if you don't try to be a missionary or something like that, if you don't try to do more, you feel really awkward within the church. You really want to do more because everybody is doing more. And that's kind of a reaction because of all the hostility coming from the outside. And there's also a feeling of being really alone in the desert. You're alone, you don't see any other Christians around you. The closer church is 2 hours away driving. So you don't meet that other church very often. So you're really by yourself in the middle of nowhere. And you really feel lonely at some point. You kind of wonder if you're really not really weird because you're Christian, if the others are not really true because you're the only one. And so if we can do some kind of partnership with that church, I think that would be great. First, for them, we can just tell them that they are not alone, that it's not awkward to be Christian, that's something normal, and we can share faith, and this is a great encouragement for them. And what they can bring to us, I think that's another point of view, and another way of living faith with a totally different circumstance, and they can witness of what God is doing in their lives. Because when you've got that much of pressure from the outside, I can tell you that God is really doing things in your life. And you really see the hand of God in your life. And they can bring us a greater maturity also. Because of everything they are living, it's kind of a way to say, okay, I've got a lot of luck. I can come to church without any pressure, and this is easy for me. And it's really a way to open your eyes. And it could be, as I said here, an encouragement to strengthen our own faith. by looking at what we are doing, trying to share faith together. That's really an encouragement for us too. And I was thinking about ideas how to do that, practically speaking. And we can start by writing letters to try to get to know each other. We can try to show them how we live our own faith here, because it's going to be a great encouragement for them just to say what you see around you, how you live your faith in everyday life. I remember just the day I came back and I told them, you know, in the U.S. you walk into a supermarket and you see Bibles to sell. And we're all so happy. We're happy for the whole evening, you know, just to know that. And we can share our faith in one way or another. That's it. If you've got any questions.
So did your parents attend that church also?
No,
or
no.
Still live
no, they're living really far away from that place. That's 6 hours of driving. So.
Really?
Across a little low mountain that is in the middle of France, but this is really, it takes a long time to drive through that.
There
are quite a lot of Bible studies in the homes of the people living here. And especially they are starting a new church, and before starting that new church, the kind of service would be in somebody's place. It was at the missionary's place, at other churches, it in somebody's basement or something like that, simply because they don't have any building.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask, was that since it's so far away to even get to a church sometimes, are there a lot more fellowship types of things where they get together?
No, usually being far away, people are going to drive. You've got people driving 1 hour to go to church or something like that. And in fact, that the density of Christians is really low. So you've got at some places, you've got 3 people meeting together for sharing faith, and this is all they've got. Otherwise, they need to drive 1 hour to go to a real church that is more established. The problem of the buildings is more a problem of money, of purchasing a building.
So, on the surface, it would certainly seem that the idea that you can walk into Walmart and see Bibles on the shelves and that you can speak of your faith anywhere and people will pretty much just let you do your own thing, that would seem encouraging, but I have to wonder how these brothers and sisters of ours over there, living their faith in the conditions that they do, and you see the very difference. The fact that they are so challenged and opposed mm-hmm. makes them grow in their faith. Mm-hmm. And you see the very same thing in the New Testament, that when there was persecution, when opposition came and the church was scattered, that's when the gospel message really grew.
Mm-hmm. But this is what I said. This is really double-sided, you know.
Well, I have to wonder, though, how these brothers and sisters of ours would feel knowing that, for the most part, the American Protestant church at large is very lazy and complacent, and we've got 15 Bibles laying around on our shelves collecting dust while we're out playing video games and seeking pleasure.
Mm-hmm. That's really, in my mind, a way to bring both sides an encouragement. For them, this is an encouragement of knowing that they are not alone in the world, of knowing that being a Christian is not being somebody who is totally weird. Mm-hmm. I remember somebody, a friend of mine, where I was studying, telling me, you cannot be a scientist and being a Christian. It's not possible. come into the U.S. and you will see.
Yeah.
I mean, this is simply because you have so few Christians in France.
But
on the other end, for here, this is really encouraging to see people with a very strong faith, burning with faith. I mean, last time I was there this spring, I was really at the service. I remember thinking, wow, God is really here. When we say, when you assemble, God is with us, I was really feeling his presence. He was full of strength, and you were really feeling that people were burning with faith. And that was really an amazing feeling. When people were singing, that's not a little whisper in the back or something like that. They're really shouting, you know, and you are seeing it with a lot of joy and a lot of power and strength, and that was really great. That was really an encouragement for me. This is what I told them, in fact. I told them, I thought first that we would help you, we would encourage you, but coming here, you encourage me. I was the one being encouraged the most.
That's good to hear.
And I mean, when I see somebody was in a youth group sending emails to try to explain what she's doing in Africa, and explaining she was in the middle of a civil war, she had to be hidden by the people over there because they wanted to kill all the white people. She had to escape by night to drive a few hundreds of miles to move to another country and then take a plane to leave to another country in Europe before finally coming back home. You feel, wow, right? I'm not living like that. But this is also an encouragement, you know. This is a girl I saw every week. And now I see everything she's doing, and this is also an encouragement for me. This is trying to push on me to strengthen my faith, and this is, I'm thinking, what am I doing here? And she's doing all of that, am I doing something worthy also?
And you know, oftentimes here, I mean, we think of someone living in that situation, and they're doing so cheerfully for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes here, we're afraid to even bring up the name of Christ in front of people who we consider friends. Mm-hmm. I guess if I were in that situation, I would have a hard time in my fleshliness, not being indignant, seeing the church in America has really taken quite a beating compared to what it was a few hundred years ago. Nevertheless, to see the kinds of open doors and opportunities and freedoms that we have here and the lack of opposition, all these opportunities that we simply pass by and don't take advantage of, from the perspective of someone there, I would look at that and go, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You're missing all these opportunities. I almost feel like we need to have the French come here to be missionaries.
Yeah. But you know, I remember a pastor in France who told me that in his mind, every single pastor just getting out of school needed to visit three different places, to spend 6 months in France, 6 months in the US, 6 months in Africa. Mm-hmm. And then he would have a nice overview of Christianity. And I think this is really true. It was before I came here, and now I realize that it was true for the US at least. I've never been to Africa yet, but... And that's really the first thing I thought when I came to the US was, it's really bringing me something to my faith. The fact of having both, you know, both sides. And this is what I would like to be able to do here. For everybody who has not traveled, who has not been living in France or in any European country with the same kind of problem or the same kind of aspect, to bring that without leaving your home. No, but you know, even the fact that in hotel rooms you've got Bibles, everybody in France is talking about that.
Really?
That's something everybody knows. Because that's something that seems weird for the people.
Wow. That's true. Are you traveling all over the place to tell people about God?
And what?
To tell people about God, are you traveling all
over
the places?
Not traveling that much all over the places, but...
What brought you to Albuquerque in particular?
Work. When I was in that military center, this is very close to Sandia, so I was working with Sandia Labs too. We're collaborating on common projects. That's how I got to know people here, and then I came back to work with them.
So how did you find Americans?
When I was asking for my way to go to a Presbyterian church, they explained to me, this is far away, you should go to that church. Okay, let's try.
It's where a land of convenience, aren't we?
That's also something you cannot imagine being in France. Like coming in a place and you've got churches everywhere and you need to choose, to pick one. I mean, you're in France, you go to the closest one, you're driving for some people really far away, and this is the only one.
So what is the average distance that's in time that somebody would drive to find a Presbyterian church or a Protestant church? I'm sorry.
I don't know, but in that church, people living farther away, they're driving 1 hour, 1 hour and a half, something like that. Just single trip, so they need to drive.
Yeah.
as long for coming back home. And that's the same thing for the youth group. Every time we were meeting, we had some youth who had to sleep there at the place because it would have been too far away to do that in one day.
Yeah, the positive thing about that is, you know, if you come and you stay the night, you're spending a whole lot of time with the people, having some good fellowship.
Right.
Yeah, and this is what I wrote, that feeling of being part of the same family, that's very, very strong. I mean, you've got the people in the youth group, they all know each other for years. They're born together, I would say. And they always saw each other. They always came to fellowship, to have fellowship together. So they are really close to each other.
So, you know, that's always been our desire here, not only in Friday nights of youth, but for the church to have this type of family. Mm-hmm. Too many times, you know, you have kids grow up and they reach they can go to youth and they come to youth for 6-7 years and they get to the age where they're college and they don't want to be a part of the youth, they're out and you never see them that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my vision's kind of always been to that we're family. Even if we get older, we're still family, we can still fellowship, you're still in the church, we still should be fellowshipping and growing in the Lord mm-hmm. together and maturing and not going off and doing our own thing, unless God calls us to a different country or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but in America, I find that it's like just because of our age, we separate from one another. We think that we're in. I'm in college now. I don't want to hang out with those, you know, teenagers or kids or whatever. You know, and so they leave, although they grew up years and years. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not saying.
Well, they're all starting. All of them are starting.
But that's kind of the mindset is, you know, we should have a closeness that our love for one another is so strong, you know, that we long and desire to spend time with one another, you know, and grow together in our faith.
Yeah, but you know, there's also a matter of comfort and personal convenience. In the U.S., you can choose which church you want to go to. So that means that when you start to grow up, to know exactly what you are going to do and who you are going to be, you can choose just to be with people exactly like you. In France, you don't have a choice. I mean, you cannot even choose the denomination of a church because this is the only one in all the area. So you need to be with people, to spend time with people, to share faith with people. That could be very different from yourself and from the people you're working with. Simply because you're together, you've got one thing in common, and this is the only thing you can share, you're Christians, and everybody else around is not Christian. And sometimes this is kind of hard in the church, because you really need to work on yourself, because sometimes you're not going to understand your wants, and you think, why am I wasting my time with that guy, and something like that. But also that's so rich, because it imposes you to try to make some arrangement with that, and to try to understand his point of view, and things like that. I think I remember seeing that in some churches they've got a group for simply for nurses, and then you've got a group for physicians and things like that in the churches. I mean, that's really turning around in your little box with all the people exactly like you, and that's all. And this is easy because then you know you're not going to have anything special to do. Is I really like you? Is going to go all smoothly and things like that. When it rises, it's more an effort on yourself to try to go with people very different from who you are and to try to get to know them and to try to appreciate them, to love them. And
right. It forces you to grow and reach out.
Mm-hmm.
Loving those who love you, even the Pharisees do that. You know, you mentioned the separation of church and state in 1905.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and actually in America's recent history in comparison, there were laws passed regarding the separation of church and state also. The basic ideals behind those being to keep the hand of government out of control of the church so that the government couldn't control the church. And unfortunately, that's been very much turned around in this country to where people are using that as leverage the other way to basically use the government to and those laws and interpret them in such a way that it restricts church activity. Speech about Christ is becoming, you know, regarded as hate crime.
at this point. I'm just wondering how that's played out in France, if it's similar at all or...
Well, that's kind of always a very difficult balance, and that's kind of a constant struggle, you know. You had for centuries and centuries, the church and the state were totally mixed together. There was a Catholic church that was blessing the state, and all the kings were working with the Catholic church and struggling for power for centuries and centuries. You had numerous wars just for a matter of power, who would rule over the country. And so on one hand, I think that's really great that it's, that link is broken. Because what people I saw is people struggling for power over them. So that's really a bad image to give to the people for church. Another reason was also that the church in the Middle Age, you would not go to church because you had faith. Simply, you have a firstborn of the family, you would inherit everything. Most of the time, your second one would go to serve another lord or another noble, and then the third one would have nothing. So only one way to survive, going to the church. So when you imagine 13 or 14, and you walk into a convent and you know that the door is going to close forever behind you, you're never going to have a family and something like that, you need to be there, and you need to be there for a living, that's all, you don't have any choice. So that's kind of hard then to really witness of Christ and to have really a strong faith and things like that. And so you had people doing horrible things in the name of a church, simply because for them the church was living. And then you also had some people were unable to reach the power from a political point of view, unable to reach the power from a military point of view, and they use the church to have the power. And again, that's a really bad image for the church. So it's really nice to break that link and to remove the church from the power, from a place of power. But on the other hand, also people have of course been using that kind of laws to try to prevent the church from talking, for saying its point of view and things like that. And in recent years, in fact, I remember people in the U.S. talking about all the recent laws about the scarf and the veil and things like that. And in fact, all these laws are really helpful because we've got the Muslims growing really strongly in France. They've got a huge population of immigrants from Muslim countries, and they're now working on these populations to try to grow in the Muslim faith. And you've got funding coming from Saudi Arabia and places like that to build mosques in France and everywhere, and really to fund the expansion of the Muslim faith. And that kind of law is really to try to put a limit for them, because they don't want that separation of church and state. What they want is to grasp as much power as they can, to grow and take more and more control. So that kind of law now is really, we see that from with a French point of view as something very beneficial, even as a Protestant. It's not easy for us. We need to make some concessions too. Yeah. But we see that this is to avoid something worse.
Mm-hmm. Do they teach evolution in public schools?
Yeah.
Do they teach creation at all?
No.
No? Just evolution?
Mm-hmm.
So, do they... Do you ever have two Christians arguing about doctrine? Because I know that's...
Always.
Yeah?
Yeah, always.
Because I know that's something we have a lot here. You know, you'll have these Christians that, well, their beliefs are exactly the same as these Christians, except for they believe that Jesus' hair was brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's so many sects all over that's just, you know... Well, we don't like them because they thought Jesus' hair was black.
Oh,
we think it's brown, you know, and it's not really that drastic, but almost.
Mm-hmm. So now, this is exactly the same.
Really?
And usually, the Protestants, they prefer to have kind of meetings, not with other Protestant churches, but with the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they can say they've got all wrong. So that's easy, you know, instead of starting to look for a verse or passage to try to defend yourself. But this is exactly the same. People arguing and wasting their time for nothing. And especially there's still a big separation between the Protestant church and the Catholic church. And basically for the Protestant, the Catholics, they are unsaved and they are bad and they don't get it. And from the Catholic point of view, the Protestant is split it from the church, they are weakening the church and they are heretics and things like that. And it really needs to change. I mean, the Catholic church is also in ruin now. It's falling into parts, it's falling apart. You've got nobody except the old people coming here. When you walk into a Catholic church in France, you wonder if the people inside of a church are not older than the building, you know? the priors now, some priors, they've got 50 villages at the same time, or something like that. So you see, when you're Catholic, you go to your church, you see your priors once or twice a year, and that's all. Otherwise, it's somebody else who has to stand up and do the work, simply because they don't have enough priors to do the work. I would say that's not that much of a problem, because there's nobody in the church anyway. So, yeah. But I mean, instead of fighting against each other, I really think we need to get to lie. We are sharing Christ together. So it's so many people. We've got 85% of the population who is not sharing Christ, at least. So we've got work to do. It's time to stop fighting against each other and try to expand to all the other ones. We can argue about the doctrine, but there's a lot more important things to do.
So you mentioned that here it's a phenomenon to have Bibles at Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bibles that you have there in France, is there just one translation, or are there?
No, there are a couple of translations. The problem is that want to buy a Bible, you need to go in a Bible shop. You've got a handful of Bible shops in France. You've got one, I remember, my parents are living close to Lyon, so I told you this is from that place in the southwest to Lyon, this is 5 hours drive or something like that. You've got people driving these 5 hours just to go to that shop to buy a Bible, to see the books, to buy a couple Bibles, and things like that.
I think you appreciate your Bible better.